So I guess that also leads into the question that we began the conference with, which is assessing the patient for eligibility to receive intensive chemotherapy, such as 7+3. And we went through a bunch of factors to consider: comorbidities, age, performance status, et cetera. But what's your personal individual approach to making that decision?
Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, it's been what fitness for AML therapy is has been debated. So in the U.S., the FDA has been justifiably interested in making sure that patients who, only those patients who aren't truly are unfit, don't get 3 and 7, because they're concerned that these less toxic therapies might be inappropriately applied to people who could be cured by aggressive therapies. I think that's their view. So they have promulgated what they consider an objective view of unfitness, the history of which I think is very interesting, because it was never based on any prospective data. It was based on a bunch of Italian hematologists sitting in Naples, coming up with, I think, with a very admirable set of guidelines for what unfit AML meant. And that meant you had to either be over age 75 or have one of a series of quite serious comorbidities, like really low DLCO, having another cancer, having renal failure, blah, blah, blah. So it was pretty stringent. To be unfit, you really have to be old or unfit in that scenario. And that is the eligibility for the aforementioned AZA versus AZA plus venetoclax trial. So, you know, these really should be unfit patients. But of course, that's just one. So you ask me what I do. Yes, I look at the patient, the eyeball test. I look to see if those so-called Ferrara criteria apply. If they do, since they're so stringent, I would not give that patient 3 and 7. But the other thing I look at very closely is the disease. I think you have to summate the disease features with the patient features. To wit, if they have complex karyotype or a P53 mutation, I am a lot less likely to give them aggressive chemotherapy because I don't feel it works. Now, you have to take that in a cautious fashion because that hasn't been proven by a randomized trial yet. But having seen so many patients get 3 and 7 with P53 mutations and do miserably, I'd prefer to try something else. And there's the 10-day decitabine data plus venetoclax, which shows that there's a pretty high response rate, but unfortunately, it's not very durable. So I tend to use that in those patients. But yeah, so I look at both together. So for example, if I've got a 72-year-old fit patient who's got a P53 mutation, I'm much more likely to use hypomethylating agent-based therapy with venetoclax. If I've got a 68-year-old gentleman or woman who is mildly unfit but has an NPM1 mutation where they're likely to respond to chemotherapy, I will tend to prick chemotherapy. So it's a very individualized situation without a lot of data to support what I'm doing.
So I guess one of the other issues comes up, and we discussed this at the conference, the younger patient who would be eligible for 7+3 doesn't have any adverse features like complex karyotype, as you describe, who just says, "I really don't want to get 7+3. How about giving me HMA venetoclax?"
Yeah, I would discourage that at the moment, Neil. There are some people who say, well, so unfortunately, the rich always get richer, right? So if you look at the data from HMA venetoclax or low-dose Ara-C venetoclax, it's the patient with the chemo-responsive tumors that do the best, the NPM1 mutant patients, not so much the P53, not so much the FLT3, although FLT3 is fairly chemo-responsive. So if I had an NPM1 patient who was a Jehovah's Witness who didn't want to get 3 and 7, I might consider venetoclax and azacitidine, but they still might get transfused, so I do it carefully. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. I mean, I think we have too much data talking about the curative potential of these things, meaning 3 and 7-based therapies. But there are a lot of decisions to be made when you've got a younger adult with AML. Should they get midostaurin? Should they get gemtuzumab? Should they get CPX, I guess, if they have the bad chromosomes or the history of MDS? So there's a lot more options for induction therapy, even in the younger patient, now than there were a few years ago.